Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastama Vidivishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 66, chapter 21, Lord Krishna's explanation of the Vedic path. Those established in material passion, goodness, and ignorance worship the particular demigods and other deities headed by Indra, who manifest the same modes of passion, goodness, or ignorance. They fail, however, to properly worship me. The worshippers of demigods think, we shall worship the demigods in this life, and by our sacrifices we shall go to heaven and enjoy there. When that enjoyment is finished, we shall return to this world and take birth as great householders and aristocratic families. Right, because that's how the system works. Right? Being excessively proud and greedy, such persons are bewildered by the flowery words of the Vedas. They are not attracted to topics about me, the Supreme Lord. Right, because they think that on the material platform they will get some benefit. They'll get some happiness. So they're not actually interested beyond that. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Those who are fixed in Raja Sattva Tamas serve in Raja Sattva Tamas. Though worshipping Indra is also my worship, since Indra is my Amsa, it is not correct worship. Right? So, in other words, it is worship of him, but at the same time it's not bona fide. Right? That's the difficulty. Not being bona fide, then, because there's no such thing as separate worship of a demigod. Right? We say the demigod worship means without Krishna, but there isn't such a thing. They have to be worshipped in connection to Krishna, but they won't do that. Right? Does that make sense? Yes. So there is no recommendation of worship of demigods. There's worship of Krishna, maybe in the context of demigods, you know, connection with that. But that's only because they're going to do those things anyway. So that's just a way to connect them through to Krishna. You know, remember, you know, like putting the medicine in something sweet. It's not about the sweet, it's about the medicine. Yes. But for the kid, it's about the sweet.
Right? Yes. Yeah. Okay. They're performing sacrifices and then they go to heaven. And from heaven they can return back to earth.
Yes.
And then again back to heaven, back to, so the cycle is just going on.
Yeah, like that. What else, what do you think you've been doing since time immemorial?
Counting.
Yeah, it's just going around and around. Yeah. You know, in other words, what do you call it? The MC at the Barnum and Bailey Circus was actually a student of the Upanishads when he said, "Around and around and around they go, where they stop, nobody knows." Right? So, yeah. Yes.
Can we say that the worship of the Gopi for Katyayani, this is a perfect example to worship of the demigod?
Means it's supposed to be in connection with Krishna. It's just a matter of that there's people who are so not interested in God consciousness that they're going to do anything else, anything not recommended. So therefore the Vedas give a recommendation simply to regulate it, so in that regulation then you can start to control it and pull yourself from that. You understand? But it's not that it's authorizing that. It's generally taken that, no, it's authorizing the Vedas. No, it's not actually. It's just a matter of those who can't understand the actual purpose, which is Krishna consciousness, they take these secondary processes as actually goals. You know, authorized goals. But they're never authorized goals. Never. Like that. Does that make sense? The idea is that you're working, but then you move past that and go into Krishna consciousness. Because the Vedas is about Krishna consciousness. It's given by Krishna. What else will it be about?
Yes. So is it that after enjoying for such a long period of time, then getting fed up, you know, with the fruitive results, then they go for the Gyan, and then that process begins for them?
Yes. And then you come back to karma. Right, you just keep going around. Unless you come in contact with devotional service, then it just goes around and around. And you throw a little Buddhism there in between, and a complete program. Because they do not worship properly, they fall from their position. It is said, Aham hi sarva yajnanam bhokta cha prabhur eva cha. Natumam abhijananti tatvenatas chavanti te. I am the enjoyer and master of all sacrifices. Those who do not know me in truth fall down. Sri Krishna continued. The Vedas, divided into three divisions, ultimately reveal the living entity as pure spirit soul. The Vedic seers and mantras, however, deal in esoteric terms. And I also am pleased by such confidential descriptions. Right? Because if it's esoteric and they're not sincere, they take it as something else. And if it's esoteric and they're sincere, then they understand and connect it to Krishna. But if it's very direct and obvious and they don't take it, then that's annoying. Right? Sri Krishna continued. The Veda... Okay, we did that. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates... This summarizes the topic. The Lord says, the Vedas are divided into three, Karmakanda, Brahmakanda, and Devatakanda. They ultimately indicate worship of me. Uddhava asks, then why do the mantras or sages who reveal the mantras not clearly speak? The Lord replies, they speak indirectly, not directly. Uddhava asks, what is the intention of not saying this directly? The Lord replies, understanding that I prefer indirect speech, they speak in that way. Right, because it's esoteric, so then it does nicely in that. It gives a taste that way. Right? Like that. So that's why when you come in contact with the devotees, then you understand what it's saying. Otherwise you won't.
So this Devatakanda is like Upasana Kanda.
That's Upasana, same. But the point is Devata means anybody who's above. So it's all about Krishna and his angsas as the devatas. But they forget about Krishna and just take the angsas. And then they think that they're the ultimate and then they're the goal and like this. So that's the... Yes?
Sometimes spiritual master also uses this indirect approach and giving instructions in an indirect way.
Yeah.
And for a disciple... You know, it's very difficult because of the cultural background and so many things. So it might take, you know, 15, 20 years to understand what was the meaning of the instruction. And so what's the, how you say, what's the use of this approach?
It means you figured it out in 15 years. That's good. You know, compared to never figuring it out, you've been here forever, then not to figure it out, then that's bad. But 15 years, that's not bad. No? The point is that now let's say now you figured it out, okay? Was what was said, was it very difficult?
No.
So, therefore, what's the obstacle that was there on why it wasn't understood 15 years ago?
Ego, less, you know. Less
yes, so problem. Therefore, even if you're direct, the ego's there, it still wouldn't do anything. Right? It means, just let us go back to some of the doubts that come up when we were discussing, you know, in the last some days, that we see here when Krishna's being very direct, that this is really, and the others are not. This is what you do, the others you don't do. This is the standard. Then what's the anxiety? Oh, we're not qualified, we have so many desires, this, that. So it doesn't matter. So therefore, you speak esoteric, then there's something you move forward, but then eventually when you do catch it, it's when you were qualified, that if you had that qualification today, saying the same thing, you'd understand it immediately. So whether it was direct or indirect, you wouldn't understand it. And then when it's indirect, oh, I can't do that. But if it's esoteric, then it's like, well, maybe, I don't know. You know. Or you'll get from it what you can apply.
So it's a good approach, actually.
Yeah. It means Krishna likes it. So. Can't be all bad. Right? You know what I'm saying? Because as we were saying, when you take your position, means good and bad is for the purpose of uplifting and purifying. So good and bad is for, good is what will uplift an individual in a particular, you know, stage of their existence, and bad means what won't. Right? So now when we take, so there are the, you know, the principle that there is what's progressive and what's not. You know, what's auspicious, what not, that principle. Then the detail is very individual. Now when we take our individual position and try to make that the universal principle, that's wrong. Right, so Krishna says you have to give that up because we judge everything by our platform rather than devotional service. Because all that basically changes is that we know what to do and what not to do, but it's based on what is favorable devotional service or not, rather than what's favorable for us.
Yeah.
Right? Means what's favorable for us to do service, yes, but what's just what we feel is good, that has to be given up.
Yeah.
You know, we have to see it from Krishna's angle. Right? It's the same, that sarva dharma parityaja. Right? So that's what must be done. So then it's a matter of, at our particular stage, something said, even though technically it might be straightforward, for us it sounds so esoteric. You know, it's like, you know, telling the one kid, don't harass your brother, be nice to him. That is like extremely esoteric. Right? You know, why don't you speak in, you know, the regular language or stuff? You know what I'm saying? So that's it.
Can you not say that when the indirect speech has been used, it can have more than one meaning also?
Indirect can have more than one meaning. Yes. But I'm saying, what's the point of it having more than one meaning? You know what I'm saying? In other words, the direct or indirect or the meanings or not, they should be seen in the context of, in this case, what's being said. The spiritual master is saying something and the disciples hearing that and then trying to apply that in their life, then it may take them 15 years to get it to work. Is it in that context? Or are we just discussing
this context where Krishna is saying to Uddhava.
But it's the same context.
Yeah, the context is same. Because
yes, but I'm saying, are we talking about, so how are you applying that? Can there be more than one meaning? What's the purpose of that?
Yeah, because the six philosophies, you know, they are coming up because maybe they're not able to understand the indirect language of the, and then they're speculating on it, and then they come up with their own ideas. And
yeah, and so then is that a fault of the Vedas?
No, it's not a fault of the Vedas.
By saying, what's the point of the question? You know what I'm saying? Because in other words, we're discussing the technicalities of direct and indirect speech, but not in the context of what's going on here. Because the context of what's going on here is Krishna appreciates this because it's slightly hidden. So only those who are actually serious about knowing, they'll know, and the others won't know. Because we saw a few verses back, Krishna saying he's the source of all these bogus philosophies, and he gives them to him through the modes of nature, and people take them because they're not interested in Krishna. Right? So you have to see it all in like that. Otherwise, then it just becomes the thing is that, okay, indirect speech is good. But then indirect speech has caused these six cools, so it appears to me it's actually not so good. But the indirect speech has been mentioned that Krishna likes it. But then, you know, here it's like, well, it's not, so maybe, you know, so then what, you understand? So in other words, we go into Syadvad. You understand? That's the point that we're saying is that this modern kind of intellectual context is just designed to do that. Because if anybody ever alludes to a standard, then they'll throw something out that will show that it's contradictory. It's immediate. It's like, you know what I'm saying? It's just like, you know, there's a dog and then a cat walks by, the dog will bark. So if there's anything that shows that there's a standard, then the intellectual mentality will try to show it's not. Because as soon as there is, then that means then I can't speculate. It's not actually the position. But by showing that, then I throw that out and then life can go on. You know, it's a standard, what do you call it? Existential kind of thing. You know, you know, all these things eventually come from France, and so this is what they do. Like that. As soon as there's something that you have to throw it out to, because then it's like, then life goes on. We're happy. There's no, you know, because as soon as there's a thing, you have to do it. Right? But if there's no real conclusion, then it's up for, you know, what we're doing is okay. We're okay. We're great. You know, we do our things. We drink our coffee, eat our croissants. We're great. You know what I'm saying? So you have to be very careful of this because they're, and they do it the most subtle and most, how you say, most tasteful. Like that.
So in that speech, speaking and, you know, the other person reciprocating, both of them are very much qualified because they are able to appreciate each other.
Yes, but no, but see, you're doing the same thing again. Because now you're giving a context, okay, it is right in this concept, but in others it's not. But that's not the discussion here. The discussion here, we're not discussing pranamoy moral principles here. We're discussing the borderline between vijnanamoy and anandamoy. So we have to stop using semantics on the words and phrases as a point of discussion. Right? It has to be seen that this is the point. Krishna is pleased with this. They do it. Who do they do it for? So for those who are, who, in other words, to show what is the absolute truth, but also in a way that those who are not interested then won't, you know, how you say, speak badly about Krishna. Because here we have a direct point, and what are you doing? You're trying to take it into something else. That's why Krishna says this indirect, he likes that. Because then it's indirect, you'll never do that. Because you won't know it's about Krishna. You won't know it's about this. So you can't do that. But as soon as it said Krishna likes this, then immediately you're trying to show how that's not very nice. Right? And when we're dealing with 11 canto, that's not very good. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
Sri Krishna continued, "The transcendental sound of the Vedas is very difficult to comprehend and manifests on different levels within the prana, senses, and mind. This Vedic sound is unlimited, very deep and unfathomable, just like the ocean." Because we're taking it that it would be very direct, just like Krishna, that Krishna is so easily understood, but because he's the absolute truth and all these contradictory elements, he's not. So it's natural that you're going to use something that explains, but it's not necessarily going to be fully understood. Because when you do say things directly, then it's not appreciated either. Right? And it's just like when you say the pratigya, people can't really make an argument. But as soon as you give their reason, now they can fight like anything. So when it's indirect, who can fight? Like that. But as soon as it's direct, then immediately. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Uddhava says, "Since there is no other way for people to accept the Vedas, the pleasures of swarga are offered just as doctors offering candy to the child so he'll drink medicine. This you have explained." Right? Because otherwise they wouldn't follow the Veda. You know, it's just like, let's say, yagyas. We've been doing the yagya in Mayapur since 84. When we installed Srimati Radharani, that yagya that was done for that installation, that was kept going, that's what's still going now. Right? And so it was going on in the temple, but of course it makes the temple turn black, so then made a yagshala, so then you can keep the temple looking nice and the yagshala, because if the yagshala is black, then you know, okay, they do lots of yagya, it's good. Right? And if it's sparkly clean, then either you think these guys are amazing or, you know, nothing goes on here. So, and so from that time, so 84, well, the 84 not so much, but once we were at the yagshala, 85. So 85 to like around 95, 10 years. Every time during the festival or anyone's visiting, they come to the yagshala and see the yagya and all that, and they sit there kind of skeptically sitting in the corner, and afterwards then they go, you know, this is, you know, Treta Yuga. Why are we doing this? We chant Hare Krishna, you know, like that. We're not into all these yagyas. And always the same thing, exactly. For 10 years. Until someone in America figured out that there's all these Hindus outside, and now that they come to the temple, and you know they give donations. They're not like the you know, the local Americans who don't give anything because they didn't learn about charity, right? You know, unless you're, you know, need a mosquito net and you're in Africa, then you don't get charity, right? Like that. So then they figured out that the Indian community would give money, and especially they loved yagyas, and it's universal. All Indians like yagyas. It doesn't matter the background, where they're from, this, that, or anything.
Why?
Because it's Vedic. So they all identify the Veda, and so everybody does like that. Then, now they come to me, oh, could he show us this and that, and you have books and mantras and this and that, and you know, like this, and you know, it's for preaching, you know, fundraising, and like that. So now that it's preaching, now it's okay, but otherwise before it was Karmakanda, Treta Yuga, like that. So, that's the whole point, is that unless there's a benefit, no one's going to do it. So because they see the benefit, then they see swarga, so then they're willing to follow the Vedic things. But the point is it's only the candy. If the actual point is that seeing it's all connection to Krishna, going through, regulating the life, controlling the senses, and in this way, then gradually, it moves up. But since this process is so slow, that's why the acharyas come and preach. Because otherwise it takes forever for someone to get through this cycle. So they just come in and tell them how they're the, you know, the soul servant of Krishna and like this. And so then it moves forward more quickly. Does that make sense? So, because the idea of the Vedas is on all levels everyone would be connected. Because otherwise if not, you're outside the system. And so then all angles of, you know, Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, they all have the Shastra, and it tells all these things, and there's plenty of flowers. Like that. But the point is that's not what it's for.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
No fruits.
Huh?
No fruits.
No fruits, yes. No fruits.
Maharaj, without the acharya, we cannot take the fruit.
No. Because pure devotion can't be understood by any mental speculation. So there's no way it can be gained except by the association of devotees. That's why the association of devotees is so important. So you see, as of all things, you want to increase the association of devotees. To do that, then you need to organize things. So you can do that on a big scale. So that's where management comes in. It supports creating sadhu sangha. And in that sadhu sangha, then performance of devotional activities. Right? Does that make sense?
It's perfect.
Yes, perfect. This you have explained. Jaimini and others also seem to explain things with a similar intention. Krishna responds, that is not so. If they had known, they would have explained this. No one can really know the meaning of the Vedas without me or my devotees like Vyasa and Narada. That is explained in this verse until the end of the chapter. So, Jaimini and the others actually didn't understand because they haven't come in contact with the devotees. Therefore, then they come up with their own philosophy. But you can't say that if he had, that they wouldn't have come up with their own philosophy. Right? We have those that have heard from the parampara are, you know, practicing like that, and they still make up their own philosophy.
Yes.
Right? So that's the difficulty. The Veda is difficult to understand regarding its true nature and function. It has two forms, gross and subtle. The subtle form of the Vedas is difficult to understand. First, the Veda is para, related to prana, situated in the Muladhara chakra. Then it becomes Pashyanti, related to mind, situated in the navel in the Manipura chakra. Then it comes to Madhyama, related to intelligence, situated in the heart in the Anahata chakra. Then it becomes Vaikari, related to the senses. In using speech, the sense organ called the voice is predominant or prominent. Moreover, the Veda, made of material and spiritual prana, is infinite, Ananda Param, not divided by space or time. Right, so here, this is direct, right? But at the same time, it's going through all these things, and it has that aspect of indirect. Right? So even though it's here, we'll go, well, what has this got to do with anything? But the point is it starts with para. It starts with the transcendental position. But then as it comes up, unless we identify it that way, then it transforms. Because once it gets to the mind, then what does the mind do? Right? What's your goal? How are you going to see? What's the attitude? Then you use your intelligence to apply so you can apply the senses. So when it gets to that point, unless it's appreciated, then it's going to come out material. Right? That's the question of the... is it the... Parikshit Maharaj is asking to Sukadev Goswami in the 87th chapter of Krishna book about how is it that you're dealing with the material body and chakras and sound and air and ether and all this. How do you get transcendental sound? Right? Because of the connection with the parampara. Right? Because otherwise it's all mechanically material.
You cannot produce.
No. Yeah. So, yes, you can't produce the spiritual. Spiritual then can go through.
Yes.
Just like the pot can't produce cooking. Because it doesn't give the ingredients, it doesn't give the fire, it doesn't give the spoons, it doesn't give the technique or the recipe. But through that medium, you get your preparation. Right? So that's the problem. We think the pot's doing it. Right? So even in, you have in European, you know, I say lore about the pot that cooks unlimited amounts of stuff. I think there's a Russian one with porridge or something.
Yeah,
and it just, someone, you know, the kid starts it and doesn't know what to do, and then there's porridge, the whole village is swimming in porridge. Like that. No?
Every tradition has that.
Yeah, that kind of pot. Yeah.
A new one produces the gem.
Huh?
In new cartoons, it produces not the porridge, but the
gems. The gems, right? Because kids don't like porridge anymore like that. Like that. Probably if it produced Twinkies or something, then they'd like it. You know? No? But the moms aren't going to like that. So moms like gems. You know, the kid likes gems, so it's good. Right, so... these things, how it works, its true function, we're not understanding, because even if you give that very direct, essential point, it's so high that we're not going to catch it. So it'll be called esoteric. It's indirect, because we just want direct for us means secondary. But it's not. It's primary. So even though you're giving very clearly how it works, it's still esoteric. Does that make sense? Because it's above their understanding. So that's why he says, you know, Jaimini, you know, did he understand? He says no, because if he is, he wouldn't have explained it like that.
We need to be qualified to understand.
Yes, so that's the point of the only devotional service can make you qualified. So it's only by chanting. And then we think, no, I can go to the school, or I can do this, or I can figure it out from the internet and all that. But then that's just false ego. Like that. And that we can do ourselves, yes. That we can cultivate our own false ego like that. Yeah. But even that, it still is a potency of Krishna. It has to be given by Krishna. That's why in the beginning when you try to cultivate it, it doesn't work out so well because Krishna's not pleased. But then when he sees, no, you're determined, okay, then have it. You know? You know? And then when you can't walk through doorways because your head's too big, you know, all these things, then it becomes difficult. you know.
Like a plane.
Yeah, it's like, that's why, like at universities and that, and, you know, you have those big, huge doors and all that, because otherwise they can't get their heads through the doors. Like that. No? Yeah. Like that. And those who, you know, are more esoteric, it's more lofty, so it's even that way, so you have those huge doors, very tall, very wide, then they can get through. Like that. But not much discussed, but... In terms of meaning, it is also difficult to understand. Its meaning is very deep, right? So that's the point, is that depth and that trying to hold that together. Then it's esoteric. But it's not that it's not, in how you say, not direct. You know, it's you know, how you say... Confidential, because he says confidential description. He doesn't say it's indirect. It's esoteric, so it's confidential. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. And so the problem is unless you're qualified, then it's not understandable. So intelligence isn't enough. That's the point. Yeah? So they speak indirectly. Right? Okay. Okay. In terms of... Okay. Shruti says, wise men know the four aspects of sound in the Vedas, by which truth is known. They do not reveal the three aspects which are hidden within the body. Men speak the fourth form as words, Rig Veda 1:164-45. Right? Even Shankara talks about this, it's just yes. It's a standard thing like that. Because people don't understand the others. What's nod? You write that, because that's para, it's coming from Krishna, it's Krishna's potency. Right, that. Then it comes up through. Then it gets that potency. Then it gets to the mind. So then the mind is thinking of the what it is that you want to accomplish. Right, and yes, that aspect of it. That what is being done to accomplish it. Then it gets to the heart. Then what things you need to perform those activities to accomplish it. Then it comes to the voice. Now to apply it to accomplish it. Yes, no?
Yeah.
Because that's how it works. Because we'll say, no, it starts here at the practical. No, it starts at the esoteric. That's why sometimes you have a feeling, but you can't bring it to words.
Yes.
Because you can't get it past the first chakra.
Okay.
Right? You know, and then if you get more, it's almost there. I can't quite catch the word or things like that. It means you can catch the activity of it, or the results of it, like that, the verbal aspects and those kind of things, but you can't get the actual noun aspect of it, right? You can't get, you know, what it is exactly that you're trying to say. Does that make sense? Yeah, that takes sitting in a bathtub. Right. The meaning is this: the words of the Vedas, Vak, are measured. Padani means those forms by which the supreme truth is known. The sounds have four forms which the wise know. They do not reveal the nature. They do not reveal the nature of the three which are hidden in the body, because men speak the fourth form, Vaikari. Men speak this, but they do not know the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so unless you can appreciate the others, why bring it up?
Yes.
Because it'll just be, this is not practical. You know, we were looking for substance here. But the point is para is the substance. Right? So unless the vaikari is in line with para, then it is also illusory. It's no substance. Right? Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur points out that in the next three verses, Lord Krishna explains how the Vedas arise from himself, starting from the form of para, made of prana. Right, because in the body you have the life airs and the movement and all that. That's how you tell. So when the soul is there, the prana will be there. There's no soul, there's no prana in something. Right, the Lord's there, but there's no prana.
There's no life.
Yeah, but so that means that life, what we call life, is separate from the jiva.
Yes.
Right, because the jiva is not producing that life.
Yes.
It's not producing that you know, symptoms of life, all that. That's that Krishna's producing.
Yes.
Right, through prana. But because the jiva is there, that's why the prana then follows. Right? Because Krishna is making all the arrangements. Does that make sense? So when the soul leaves, the prana goes.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Yes? No? Too esoteric?
That's very esoteric. But there's one verse, I think it's in Bhagavatam, it says that before the Lord activated all my organs, I was like that person. And then the main one is the speech.
Right. Yeah, because that's how you tell someone's consciousness.
What's this four forms which the wise know?
Four forms. You have the nod, then you have the what do you call it? The muladhara, then you have the what is it? Then the what do you call it? The mind at the Manipura, Madhyama, you know, in the Anahata, you know, which is related to intelligence. And then it becomes Vaikari, which what people speak. So Vaikari is what everybody knows. Right? That's the whole.
So it means this four forms, which you said now, and then the three that are hidden, that's the first three.
That's the first three. So only what comes at the throat chakra, that's Vaikari. That we know as speech.
Yes.
But actually speech includes the other three.
Mm-hmm.
But,
so in the Vedas, when it's connected to the Vedas, these four things, it means that whatever is been said, that's only we know, and the three hidden meanings we can understand only through spiritual master.
Yeah, through the spiritual master and devotional service. It means some others get some degree of understanding, but they'll never get a complete understanding unless the Lord is involved. Because otherwise, para means it's transcendental.
Yes.
Because everything's coming from the transcendental Lord. So life comes from Him. You know, all the different things come from Him. So that's where it originates. But then we interpret it in the mundane. So it's important if for understanding the transcendental position, these have some meaning. But if you're just interested in the mundane, you don't understand them. Life goes on very well. You know what I'm saying? So this comes up as theirs because those things that are there, they're esoteric. They're confidential. So that's why it's not explained except in a way that someone could appreciate that confidentiality. Right? Because otherwise, then we'll just take the secondary. You know, just like reading esoteric pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. The thing is what will we catch? We'll catch the particular activity and something unique and how Krishna did this and did that. You know, it's just like, okay, Krishna is sitting in the, you know, it mentions, he's sitting in the middle of all the cowherd boys like they whirl in the middle of a lotus, right? You know, with all the leaves around. So we'll catch that kind of aspect. And that, okay, he looks and wherever they're sitting, wherever they're, whichever line they're in and wherever they're, whichever they're in front of him or behind them, they all see him looking at them. So they're all right there in the front and they're all able to appreciate. Because there's no time and space, so, right? But we'll catch that part. But the part of rasa, and that's why it's going on. So the icha shakti we won't even see. We'll just see the jnana and kriya aspects. Right? And it'll inspire us that we want to, you know, we like this Vrindavan stuff and all that. But the point is what we're gaining from those descriptions is not the same as those who are on advanced devotional platform, right? Those who are liberal, when they see the rasa. On prema, they just see the rasa aspect. Because these things, yeah, that's how you do it. You know, it's just like, let's say you're drinking a cup of tea, and you're appreciating, you know, it's cold out, and that it's, you know, you're warm, and, you know, it's pleasant, and the fragrance, and all this. You know, that's because you're the experience, but someone else is just about the mug and, you know, what's in the mug and what kind of tea, and this tea does this and that tea does that. You understand? So that's the thing, is that taste is not there. We have a taste for technicalities, and we can appreciate some of these finer technicalities. So in that way, it is about Krishna, it's progressive. But what I'm meaning is we're not getting the same benefit that, like, say, the six Goswamis are getting when they're sitting there, you know, at Radha Damodar and staying up all night and talking about Krishna. So that's why we have to be very careful not to let false ego come up, that we're reading these same books, and so I know all those points or those facts. And so therefore, then, you know, we're like the Goswamis. No, it's just, you know, the facts, that's all. They know the taste. That's the actual point. You know, does that make sense? You know, saying, this is a samosa. Right? And so, and this made out of, you know, generally you take some kind of flour and then you make the dough, and from this you can either make a thicker, you know, a medium thick dough like the Bengali samosa, which is, it's more about the inside than that, or you can make the much really thick but very, what would you say, kind of, I think the term's short, the dough is short, means it has lots of butter, right? Because I think the other one, because it has less, when you pull it, it gets, you know, it'll stretch. But the short one, you pull it, it breaks. I don't know if that has anything to do with the long and short, but in other words, like that. But they make it quite short. So it's a very thick crust. But because it's buttery and all that, it also falls apart. But because it's that, you have to put more masalas, you know, so like that, you get different kinds. Then you have the kind where they do like a, what is that, the super thin stuff? Filo?
Filo.
Filo, yeah. They do like that kind and wrap it many times and all that. That's a different style and all that. And then inside you can put various kinds of vegetables. You know, potatoes, very popular. Potato with cauliflower, potato with peas, potato with corn. You know, just corn, just pani. It does this, that. You know, so you can do so many things like that. Then there's chutneys you can eat it with like this. And then, you know, it's also then what you fry it in, how quickly you fry it. You know, you could freeze them and then, you know, I mean, make them and then freeze them, then take them out and then just, you know, fry them and use them like this, that we can keep all that. So, in this way that, you know, I am the, you know, great scholar on samosas. But, there's one slight, small problem. I've never tasted one. You understand? So, that's the difficulty. Is that we take it and we turn something that's a matter of taste into scholarship. So even if you say, I've never read this, you know, because that means, it also means I've never tasted it. Or they're already getting the taste from the other references and all that, so then they don't. Does that make sense? So the point is you can read. But the point is what you'll get won't be the same. Does that make sense? Yeah?
Maharaj, if we are mainly at the four level in the world, it's like argument is coming in that level.
Which is coming?
With the argument with the world.
Yes, yes, yes. The because then we have our attachments, and then there's arguments, and then there's all...
No.
What's to argue about? Yes. It's just relishing.
Yes.
Right? So that we'll see coming up more and more in Chaitanya Charitamrita. I mean, it's already been explained like that, and it's there, but you'll see that kind of reference will be given more and more. So just the first, that devotional service as opposed to not doing devotional service. Then devotional service, you know, because it's connection to Krishna, then, you know, engaging your nature, but then coming to the point where it's pure, it's about Krishna. And then in its being pure, then seeing that it's doesn't have these other aspects. And then what symptoms to look for. You know, like this not seeing good and bad. That would not have been one of the... That would not have been on our list, let alone high on our list, on important points on advanced devotional service. You know, we would put down hair standing on end, rolling on the ground in ecstasy. Still all secondary stuff, right?
Yes.
So we're not even seeing... this is higher. It's still secondary, but it's the qualities. But why? Because of the absorption in Krishna. Right? And so then once that's appreciated, then we'll see in the next level, then it's about how it's the taste between Krishna and the devotees, the rasa. That aspect. Does that make sense? So these things that he's the supreme, he's the lord of his energies, like that, you know, and that devotional service at a point. But now we see this third part of Krishna, that he is the lord of rasa. He is rasa. Mm-hmm. That will come up.
Yes.
But that comes after this.
Yes, yes.
You know, it's like churning the milk ocean. You get the nectar, but first of all, there's all the stuff that you don't really want to deal with.
This is goodness.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah? We're all good? Not so good?
I was thinking that the sound that every sound that comes out, it goes through all those stages?
All those stages. That's why, you see, Krishna has to be involved. Otherwise, how would you make it this all work? That's why there's something that's there, you can feel it, but you can't necessarily express it. Because it's just that, it's that, that's where it starts. It just, normally, it just goes through all four very quickly. But sometimes it just gets stuck in the one, or, you know, the two, or the three, but, you know, it doesn't get to the fourth. Mm. You know, and in there the memory will come up, the words, because Krishna's knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. Mm. So you have it there, you see it right there, and you go to, you can't even find the word. You don't even know, you know, yes. You know, sometimes it's like we know it starts with an M, right?
Yeah.
So that's what's going on. So Krishna's in control.
It's even more complicated when you know several languages. In one language, it is there.
Yeah.
But you're speaking in a different language. That's why people mix languages.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like three or four languages at once, and everybody is in one.
Yeah, whichever is simpler or more used.
Yeah.
Little kids will always do that. Whichever has the shorter or most direct, they'll use that word.
Also, some points you heard in a specific language.
Yes.
That's the easiest to express.
Yeah, in that situation. It's very interesting. It's just a side thing on that same. I can remember seeing this one Indian boy. He's from Nepal, went to the Gurukul in Vrindavan. And then at quite a young age, I think like 16 or that, he went out preaching, because they used to graduate the kids at 16. Because, you know, after 16, they couldn't figure out what to do with them, right? So, you know, so you graduate. Right? So he went out preaching, and he ended up in Scotland, right? So any words and phrases and things he dealt with, you know, especially devotional or this or that, that he had been dealing with up to 16, and he was one of the ones that was more kind of like Shastra and you know, scholarly and preaching and stuff like that. You know, Nepali Brahmin, right? You know, so like that. And so all those words he would speak with that kind of Indian accent when you speak English. Any new words that he learned there, he would speak with that local English accent. And then because he first came there, he was in Scotland, certain phrases and words he says with a Scottish accent. and the words that they would use, not the ones they would use in London. So it's really far out when he's talking. It's like all these different, you know, things come up all at once. Yeah. So it's like you said, it's all that association. You know, that's the samskar. But, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur points out that in the next three verses, Lord Krishna explains how the Vedas arise from himself, starting from the form of para, made of prana. Sri Krishna continued, as the unlimited, unchanging, and omnipotent personality of Godhead, dwelling within all living beings, I personally establish the Vedic sound vibration in the form of omkara within all living entities. It is thus perceived subtly, just like a single strand of fiber on a lotus stalk. Just as a spider brings forth from its heart its web and emits it through its mouth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifests himself as the reverberating primeval vital air, comprising all sacred Vedic meters and full of transcendental pleasure. Thus the Lord, from the ethereal sky of his heart, creates the great and limitless Vedic sound by the agency of his mind, right? So you see, is all these aspects are there, the sound, the his mind, his heart, so that all that's there in the process of him manifesting this, right? Thus the Lord from the ethereal sky of his heart creates the great and limitless Vedic sound by the agency of his mind, which conceives a variegated sound such as the sparshas. Right? So the kaka gaga na, like this. The Vedic sound branches out in thousands of directions, adorned with the different letters expanded from the syllable om. Right? So om is the origin. From that you get everything else. Right? The consonants, vowels, sibilants, and semi-vowels. The Veda is then elaborated by many verbal varieties. Oh, really? Consonants, vowels, sibilants, sibilants, and semi-vowels. Okay, because Krishna's mentioning that. The Vedas then elaborated by many verbal varieties, expressed in different meters, each having four more syllables than the previous one. Ultimately, the Lord again withdraws his manifestation of Vedic sound within himself. Right, so the meters then go with four more syllables. So you have 8, then you have 12, then you have like this. Or you have another one, then from there, then it goes up. You know? Somebody said, so it always goes in that way. Ultimately, the Lord again withdraws his manifestation of Vedic sound within himself. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, just as a spider emits a spider web from his heart through his mouth, the Lord as my portion, Antayami, okay, means Paramatma, composed of supreme bliss, composed of the Vedas, consisting of all knowledge of my own energy, so Krishna speaking, taking support of the ether, appears in the Muladhara Chakra of Hiranyagarbha, Brahma. Right, so he sees that it comes up to that point from the Muladhara. From there, then it can be expressed. Because the Lord's sitting there. So he takes that position. But we see it's all there, and then all that's within him. The sky that's there, the mind that's there, you know, and then there's the intelligence and all that. Yeah. Sri Krishna continued, the Vedic meters are Gayatri, Ushnik, Anustup, Brihati, Pankti, Tristup, Jagati, Ati Chanda, Atyasti, Atyashti, Ati Jagati, and Ati Virat. So that's how many?
11.
Okay.
So we have only 11 meters.
In the entire world, no one but me actually understands the confidential purpose of the Vedic knowledge. So only he then giving it to his devotees, then they know.
Yes.
Otherwise, without him, no one knows. You know, and ultimately how much it goes, only he knows. But then he does that as Ananta. Ananta sits there and just is saying all these glories unlimitedly. Thus, people do not know that what the Vedas are actually prescribing in ritualistic injunctions of karmakanda, or what object is actually being indicated in the formulas of worship found in the Upasana Kanda, or that which is elaborately discussed through various hypotheses in the Jnana Kanda sections of the Vedas. Right, so no one will know. Unless he reveals, it will not be understood. Right, so this idea is that, you know, there's so many things and we research and this and that. Like, you know, not that we don't do our research. We call it research. The Prabhupada's point is we don't research. The Goswamis, they research. Right? They already did the research. Now we have to study what they do. So in other words, what we call research is actually just study. Like that. Because, you know, we don't know this stuff. Right? So the Lord reveals to them, they can research. Srila right? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, it is difficult to know the actual sarup or nature of the Vedas. That has just been explained. The meaning is also difficult to understand. What is to be done by following the Vedas? What do the Vedas order the jiva to do for his benefit? What is the meaning of the Vedas? What is meant by indicating various alternatives? Should I do this, or that? The meaning is, the meaning is clear. The Shruti indicates karma by seeing statements like, one should worship the Sandhyas daily. By karma, one goes to Priti Loka. So this is what should be done. The Shrutis indicate dharma as the meaning in statements like, Chodana Lakshano Dharma. Dharma is characterized by injunctions of the Vedas. This is the meaning of the Vedas. As for alternatives, there are alternative rules in Dharma, such as performing sacrifice by offering either rice or barley. Right? Means barley would be the thing. You don't have that, use rice. Right? Does that make sense? Because it's generally it's that you have something, that's the best. If you don't have it, then it can be done with rice or water. And if you don't have that, or flower petals, right? You know, if you don't have that, then just the mantra itself with water. Yes. Does that make sense? Yes. So you always have these alternatives, because something is not there. You don't have honey, you can use gur. Yes. You know, so there's always alternatives given. Right? Or there are alternatives like bhakti, nishkam karma, and jnana stated one after another. Thus it is said, bhakti yogas cha yogas cha maya manav yudhiritaha tayor eka tarenaiva purusha purusham vrajet. I have indicated both bhakti and yoga, O Manavi. A person may attain the Lord by either of these processes. O fools, this is not so. No one knows the intention, Hridayam, of the Vedas except me. Right? So, this is what people say. Notice when it was read, it's go, oh yeah, no, that makes sense. Right? Because then it was just, what was it dealing with? Just the secondary. It just has rules. Do that. If those don't work, there's secondary rules. It's talking about you can work in karma and bhakti and this and that. You have all these alternatives. Krishna says, oh, fools. No, this is not so. No one knows the intention, Hridayam, of the Vedas except me. No one except a person dear to me can know the meaning intended by me. So only devotees can know what's actually meant. Right? Just when we thought, okay, now it's clear. And it's got, nope. Sorry. Yeah. Sri Krishna concluded, I am the ritualistic sacrifice enjoined by the Vedas, and I am the worshipable deity. It is I who am present as various philosophical hypotheses, and it is I alone who am then refuted by philosophical analysis. The transcendental sound vibration thus establishes me as the essential meaning of all Vedic knowledge. The Vedas, elaborately analyzing all material duality, has nothing but my illusory energy, potency, ultimately completely negates this duality and achieve their own satisfaction. Right? So the Vedas themselves, they do all these things, they establish all these things, and at the same time they defeat all these things. So in themselves, they're complete. Right? So it's like Lord Chaitanya. We go down, you know, at lunchtime where they go, before lunch, they go for the bath. When they go there, because everyone's studying logic, so then the fun thing is they start arguments amongst themselves. Right? You know, while you're taking a bath, you know, something to do, right? You know, like that. So, you know, because they didn't have waterproof smartphones that they could do all their, you know, texting while they're taking the bath and all. Yeah. So then they do these laws. So Lord Chaitanya would come in, defeat whoever argument is there. Then after that, he'd go back and defeat that argument that he gave. You know? So like that. Then it's just established in himself and then satisfied in himself. Yeah, so the point is you have the material, and it works, but at the same time it's only a manifestation of the external energy, right? So therefore it's an illusion on that level, and so then they'll remove that and become self-satisfied, right? But at the same time, it's from that you're only supposed to know the Lord. So that's why then we have to stick to, you know, thus it is said, the lotus feet of our spiritual master are the only way by which we can attain pure devotional service. Right? That's the thing. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Uddhava says, please tell me the answer. The Lord replies, yes, certainly I will. The Vedas prescribe me. Bhakti is not different from my sarup. Thus the meaning is, quote, the Vedas establish that bhakti to me is necessary, right? So that's the ultimate need, the ultimate necessity, right? Of all goals, the topmost that's necessary is devotion to Krishna. Right? That's the only thing that, all other goals are there to get you to this goal. And so if we're given this goal right from the beginning, how unfortunate that is, and then how easy that is, you know? Therefore, we see is that these yogis, what is it? Brahma Samhita is saying that they drill the life airs for millions of lifetimes and they can't even see the effulgence from the lotus toenail of Krishna. Right? And then we're giving this directly. Right? And we see is that with some time, you get some very good results. Right? So it's just, you know, compared to millions of lifetimes, we're doing good. Right?
Фантастику хочется давать сарасам.
Yes. So that's the...
You just need to be serious.
Yes, yes, be serious.
And focus.
Yes. The final goal of sacrifices and other actions is to produce bhakti for me. So all karma is meant to produce bhakti for Krishna. All jnana is meant. All worship is meant. I have said, dharmo mad bhakti krit prokto. Actual religious principles are stated to be those that lead one to my devotional service. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:19-27. I am the meaning of all the Vedas. I am, you know, so it's not an, we're not just saying that. We can see is that when Krishna gives the details, he actually, you know, he's showing how he just directly is all that. We just say, yeah, yeah, no, he said, you know, there's this and then there's that, but there's the, he shows everything. I am the meaning of the Vedas. I am presented as an alternative and am refuted as an alternative. Right? So it's presented as an alternative because that way you'll worship the demigods. You don't want to worship the Lord, but because the benefits from the demigods, you'll worship the Lord with, you know, in connection with the demigods. And having given that as an alternative, that Krishna is the alternative, then he's refuted as an alternative and establishes, no, he's the absolute truth and the only actual point of devotion, worship.
Yes.
Right? So like that, the Vedas, then that's what they do. They give the alternative, then they defeat that alternative. Yogas trayo maya prokta narinam. Here's the long nri, right? Narinam shreyo viditsaya jnanam karma cha bhaktischa no payon yosti kutrachit. Because I desire that human beings may achieve perfection, I have presented three methods. The path of jnana, the path of karma, and the path of bhakti. Besides these three, there are no other means of elevation. Oh yeah, that's right. Get out the light. So previously you just had to sit there.
Still sit there with the light.
Oh no, I'm putting on the light. There's something here, and I'm just thinking, what has this got to do with reality? In the three khandhas, so that's from 11:26. In the three khandhas, karma, jnana, and bhakti are presented as alternatives. First, I say, do karma. Then I say, practice jnana. Then I say, perform bhakti. They are presented and rejected. First, sakam karma is rejected in favor of nishkam karma. Then, when one rises to jnana, nishkam karma is rejected. Right? Because you don't have to do so many activities.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because on the path of renunciation, you don't need all those facilities.
Yes.
Right? So in the beginning, one has so much facilities because of desire. Then, by regulating that in activities in the Lord's service, then one comes to do it just to please the Lord, so then it becomes nishkam. Right? But then with time, as long as that those activities or and those results are useful in your devotional service, they're practiced. But when they're not, then one just moves on. The detachment is there. Right? And then from that knowledge, that burns up all attachment that is left. Then when it comes to that platform, then there's no need of that knowledge anymore. Then it's just about bhakti. Then we see everything from the perspective of bhakti. We don't have to see from jnana, karma connected to Krishna, jnana connected to Krishna. We just see it as bhakti, which has knowledge and activities, right? Because jnana and kriya are there. But when it's about Krishna's desire, then jnana and kriya we see in that way. Otherwise, when it's about our desires, then we see the knowledge and activities connected to ourselves. That's where the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
Then we engage it in the Lord's service, we get purified, then it comes to actual bhakti.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But for, you know, if it's in pursuance of bhakti, it's also counted as bhakti. Mm-hmm. But we understand we're sadhakas, we're not siddhas.
Yes.
Right? Right. Some sense, unless you did something wrong and you're in the soup, right? No? doesn't mean you have one where you're in trouble, so you're in hot water. Yeah, so not that kind of siddha. That's what I mean. Siddha meaning you've actually matured in Krishna consciousness. But, when jnana is perfected, jnana should be rejected in order to attain me, right? So there's a perfection of it. You know, like we said, the inchworm, it puts the front leg down. When it's solid, that means it's perfect. Then it picks up the back one. And as soon as the back one's there, now it moves to the next one. Right? So now you're not working with karma, you're working with jnana.
Yes.
And then it's on that pure bhakti. Then, when that's solid, then you pick up the jnana, and then it's just bhakti. Something else. Yeah. No? Yeah, so it's just a progression. So we see it's explained in the context of those who are just going through these stages, these big stages. But in the devotee, it also goes through those stages.
Yes.
But it's always in the context of bhakti. That's why it's so quick. But for the jnanis and karma, that takes them forever. Like that, literally. Yes.
It seems that for the devotees, it's like big leaping from one position to another, especially those who work outside, like work in the world or whatever it's called. So it's like,
yeah, now you're, what do we call that? It's illusion, is it real, is it
so it's like it's leaping from,
so in other words, those who work in the pot, not in the clay.
Yeah. In a pot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's fire on the
pot. Yeah, yeah. Or was it peace porridge hot?
So then there's one position where we execute devotional service, and the other position, and it's huge difference between those two. So sometimes during one day we have to cross, you know, a lot of distance.
But there's no time and space, so what's the problem?
It's a matter of consciousness.
Yes, so that it only takes a moment to cross. So that practice of engaging the consciousness so that we're always connecting it there. Because without the endeavor, how do you come to that position? Right? Why does Krishna reciprocate with us in other aspects of our endeavor? Right? Because we put in a good effort.
Yeah.
So therefore, when we make that same committed effort in devotion, then he'll reciprocate there. And that's where he prefers to reciprocate. Right? That's where he reciprocates personally. The other ones he reciprocates impersonally. And that means through his energies and all that.
Yeah.
He means Paramatma is in control of it, but the actual interface is through his energies.
Yeah.
But then as it goes up, we see that he himself directly, like with Prahlad Maharaj and others, he directly interfaces.
Yeah.
So, does that make sense? Because the point is it's only a distance because we see it material, therefore there's time and space. Otherwise, as we saw before, he's saying that those who understand this knowledge, how he's in everything and everything's in him, then, you know, from the Gita Shloka, then that devotee is never separate from him and Krishna is never separate from that devotee. So then, even they're in the, you know, quote-unquote, real world, they only see Krishna, because that's all there is. When we say the real world, it means is the world that I have to practically deal with, but I don't see Krishna in it.
Yeah.
But when you see Krishna in it, it's still just the same as far as practical application. But now the devotional and all that, and there's a good chance also the quality of your practical application will improve. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. So there doesn't have to be that big leap. That's because we're not seeing that whatever position we're in, it's all connected. That's why Krishna said, I am the ritualistic sacrifice enjoined by the Vedas, and I am the worshipable deity. So he's the deity that's the goal that you're trying to get, but he's also the ritual itself. And then in the Gita it says, he's the mantra, he's the ghee, he's the paraphernalia, he's the person performing it. He's the one who's asked for that yajna to be performed. So in other words, he's everything. So the more we see that, then that's how there is no material. Or someone says, oh, okay, it's very nice chanting at the temple, then I have to go out in the real world. It says, you don't. You can go out and it's all Krishna conscious also. But then that means you can't think I'm the controller and enjoyer, have false identity and all that kind of stuff. You know? Then you know, it's all Krishna and you're a servant of Krishna. And it'll work better anyway. Right. When jnana is perfected, jnana should be rejected in order to attain me. Jnanam cha maya sanyaset. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.19.1. But no scripture ever says that bhakti should be rejected at any time. Right? They're giving up the other aspects, but bhakti's never given up. Karma is given up for jnana, jnana's given up for bhakti, but bhakti's never given up. Right? The present verse says, I am rejected. This means that because karma and jnana are rejected, I am rejected. The Lord identifies himself as those processes of karma and jnana, because you can say they are Krishna, but the point is there's more and more there's further and further manifestations that are more dear to Krishna. So you know, everything's Krishna, we're always working with Krishna, but the point is then there's a higher position that is more dear to Krishna, more pleasing to Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's why he says he is rejected. I am rejected. Okay, the Lord identifies himself as those processes of karma and jnana. I am proposed as karma and jnana and rejected as karma and jnana. Right? So Krishna himself is proposed in these ways because it's all Krishna, and then he's rejected in those ways because of the next higher position. Because you're starting from the impersonal and trying to come up to the personal. So personal means bhakti. The impersonal means all the other things. Everything else that we're seeing not connected to Krishna, that's all from the impersonal. Right? But that doesn't mean that we're impersonalists, because the point is you see all these things that are here, that's all coming from Brahman. It's based on Brahman. It functions from the potencies of Brahman. So there's no such thing as the Mayavadi or Buddhist concept of impersonal. It just doesn't exist. So he would say all this stuff is great, but then that means if this is the secondary, how nice is the actual personal, the direct? Right? The indirect we find nice, then how much is the direct? How nice? Okay? Because these processes are also means of attaining him, right? Through karma yoga, jnana yoga, it's explained in Gita. But the point is, when you see it in connection to bhakti, from that perspective, that's when it becomes dynamic. Otherwise, if you just add a little bhakti to karma and jnana, it'll be progressive, but it'll be slow. Right? So, something there?
Yeah, I'm just thinking that Ramananda Samvad, it illustrated so nicely, you know, how Mahaprabhu is asking, and then he says, okay, you know, let's go further, and then this is good, but then I want to hear some more, and that's the progression.
Okay. Do you have that book written by Prabhupada, which is just called Ramananda Samvad?
I never heard that book exist.
Oh. No one? No.
Is it like...
Prabhupada wrote it, I think, back in the 50s.
It was just in the folios, maybe.
Huh?
In the folios.
I'm not sure. I don't even think devotees know that Prabhupada wrote it.
I never heard about it.
Yeah. I've seen the book.
Wow.
Like that. Okay. But it's just like, you know, Chaitanya Charitamrita is on the five conversations, so this seems to have been written before that.
Oh,
it was just on that Ramananda Samvad, but then he gives, I guess there's some, you know, it's just a book just on that conversation. Well, Chaitanya TLC is then the five conversations.
Right.
You know, so it's one of them. Yeah.
So TLC has that, or it's just a separate?
It seems to be, it probably includes whatever's in the other one. Otherwise, then, you know, then that way there's no necessarily a need for the other one to be there. But the point is that it was, I guess it's just a furtherance of that. So that he did on all five conversations. Because they're all the main conversations in the, you know, instructions in the Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that. The Lord has his spiritual and material forms, right? As a universal form, that's his material form.
Yes.
But we know that that's considered his gross form, which means it's the potency of what makes the metaphysical work.
Yes.
Right? So it's beyond subtle. And that, yes. But for Krishna, that's called the gross form. Like that.
Different perspective.
Yes, different perspective. What we call gross, you don't even want to, you know, bring up. The material forms are rejected here, right? So he means he takes everything. So all those ones of the lower stages that you connect that to him, that's the beginning. But at some point, it has to be rejected that it's not about those things. It's about Krishna. So then if you're working with those things as service to Krishna, because that's the natural position, then you don't consider it. Just like, let us say, as a Brahmin, you're doing puja in the temple in our temple to our deities.
Mm-hmm.
What will you call that? What process?
Devotional service.
Yes, it'll be bhakti, right? Mm-hmm. It'll be devotional service. Now, let's say this is before the person joined Krishna consciousness, right? And so he's a smarta. He does, you know, pujas and yajnas for other people.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's the same activity, but then in devotional service, then now it's just bhakti. It's not seen as karma. Even though there may be the same thing. Achman, you still, you know, hold the spoon with your left hand and pick up water from the cup and then drop it into your right hand. It's not that now that you're a bhakta, then, you know, you do something else. You don't bother, you flip it behind your back over or something, some secret, you know. You use a straw, you know, but not any straw. The material forms are rejected here. Uddhava says, please explain this more clearly. The Lord replies, the Vedas take shelter of me by recommending the process of bhakti, saying that other processes such as karma and jnana are only maya, since karma is in the three gunas and jnana composed of vidya is in sattva guna. Right, karma is in the three gunas, right? Because without some touch of sattva, how would there be the regulation to be elevating?
Mm-hmm.
But the jnana is just sattva. Right? Then, okay, the Vedas become joyful. Right? So then rejecting all that. The Vedas give joy to the devotees through rasa flowing from the fruit of the sweet creeper of bhakti beyond the material gunas in the form of realization of my sweetness. Thus, the Vedas themselves become happy, right? Because in the Veda, they've explained Krishna as karma and jnana. Then they reject, and then just discuss about the pure rasa of devotional service. And in this way, then they become joyful. You know, the Vedas themselves, right? So they're only joyful when they're discussing bhakti, not karma and jnana. Right? Yeah. Some explain the verse as follows. The Vedas prescribe me as the form of sacrifice in karmakanda. They define me in Devat Larakanda. Wow, never seen that one. As the statements of the mantras. Okay, so then you have the Karmakanda, where it's going to be the sacrifice themselves. Then the statements of the mantras. Right? Then in Jnanakanda, they propose that I am ether and other things which are different from me, and then reject those ideas. This is the meaning of the Vedas. The Vedas, taking shelter of my spiritual form, reject other things as Maya, saying, not this, not this. Having completed their task. In this explanation, however, when it says that all other things are rejected as Maya, the devotees, the tools used in bhakti, the abodes of the Lord, and the other related items are not included, since they are not part of Maya. Right? Does that make sense? So the impersonal is in all form and all activity. No, it just means whatever is devotional service, that's not rejected.
Mm-hmm.
But what is karma or jnana means what's in the modes of nature. That's rejected.
Yes.
Is that right? Yeah. Yes, just like you have the Brahmanas define then how to do the ritual. The Aranyakas will explain the esoteric meanings of those mantras and stuff. So then you're being brought closer to then the Upanishads, then they'll give the Jnana form.
Yes.
Right? But then the whole point is you have to leave all that in its bhakti. Right? So even Ishopanishad we see is he's going through these technical points, but then he's pointing out that if the Lord could remove his effulgence so he can see him personally, right? So then it's about the devotion. So that's the whole point of the Upanishads, is to get to that point of pure devotion. Yeah? Conclusion. The purport of all rules concerning good and bad is detachment by restricting the tendency to enjoy. Right? So now it makes sense. Remember when we first started, it's like, yeah, okay. For those who are perfect in knowledge and devotion to the Lord, there are no material virtues and faults. All kinds of special L's today. Right? Yeah, material virtues and faults. But the neophytes should consider material good and bad according to the standard rules. Remaining fixed in the type of discrimination suitable to one's level of advancement is good. Anything else is bad. This is the basic understanding of virtue and fault. Right, so what is good for your advancement? That's good. What's not good for your advancement? That's bad. But it's what's good. Don't apply it to someone else. Right, unless they're in the same position. But someone's moved forward. You know, it's like you have the Karmakanda, then you have the Devat. Lora Kanda. Yeah.
It is Devata Kanda.
Huh?
It is Devata Kanda, and that L has come by mistake.
That comes by mistake.
Yes, by mistake.
But it's fun. Right? And so you just move up through the things. You have the rituals for then you have the higher worship, the meanings of those, you just move on until it gets to bhakti.
Maharaj, good and bad depend on our consciousness.
Yes. Yes, it means how it's defined. It's not that we define it.
Yes.
It's based on our consciousness, then it's prescribed.
Yes.
So in other words, good and bad, it's all prescribed.
Yes.
So it's like we were discussing more. There is standard.
Yes.
Right? But depending on the consciousness, then which aspects of good or which aspects of bad, then that is the system.
Yes.
Right? That becomes the you have to be able to know good and bad in six areas, according to basically karma, jnana, and bhakti. And then even within bhakti, then the neophyte, madhyam, and uttam. Because basically, neophyte means more karma, madhyam means more jnana, and then uttam means just bhakti.
Yes.
Right? Because that's the idea, is you'll use jnana up to the point of liberation. When you come to Brahma Bhuta, you don't need to use it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a tool to be used. Yeah?
There's a Russian proverb, I think it came out from the second after the Second World War. It says, "What's good for Russian is death for German."
It's death for German.
It was about vodka and cold.
Huh?
It was about vodka and winter.
Oh, I see. Oh, it means the Germans couldn't handle the vodka.
They must.
Not in that, you know, not in amount that
they
the Russian could.
Oh, okay, so yeah, they'd be finished. Right?
They have schnapps, but it's not the same.
Yeah, they use a very small little.
Okay.
Okay. Ultimately, there is no substantial basis in distinctions of virtue and fault, because they transform according to place, time, beneficiary, and so on. Right, so that's why you can't say it's fixed at this. No, you have all these things. They apply at all these levels. But there's no substantial basis for... Because you take one, and it'll apply in one way or in another. That's the whole thing. You have to see the whole thing together. In regard to the execution of prescribed duties for sense gratification, the actual intent of all the scriptures is the subduing of materialistic propensities. That's what it's for.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to control. The descriptions of such fruit or benefits offered in various phala shrutis are actually meant to help one gradually cultivate a taste for the highest benefit. Like you see in the Ekadasi Mahatmya.
Mm-hmm.
It should be you're just doing that because it pleases Krishna. But if you won't, at least following Ekadasi because of all these other benefits you might get.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
Same thing for Srimad Bhagavatam also. We have so many felicities.
Yes, yes. It should be understood that there is no inner purport to the Vedas apart from the original personality of Godhead. The Vedas, elaborately analyzing all material duality, as nothing but Krishna's illusory potency, ultimately completely negate this duality and achieve their own satisfaction and pure love for Krishna. Right? So that's the whole point. It's used to elevate, but at one point it's all rejected for just pure bhakti. And at that point, then we see that the Vedas find their actual satisfaction and pure love for Krishna. Right? These guys are warmed up a little bit. Okay, so then today is
Friday.
Okay, so Monday then, chapter 22. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.